Hi. We're going to start with a meditation. We're starting at the beginning today, what I'm talking about, starting in Genesis. We're going through the whole Bible. So, so in the beginning, God breathed life into us, into you. So if you would close your eyes and just put your hands on your lap with your palms facing up or together with one palm on top of the other, sort of a receiving posture. And if you could just connect with your breath, I want you to bring your attention with your eyes closed, if you can, to your breath. That's a beautiful breath. And I want you to focus on your breath and just notice it. Is it shallow? Is it deep? Notice the miracle of your breath. It is a miracle, a beautiful thing that you breathe. We should try to not breathe unconsciously. It's a gift. Try to breathe from the depth of your gut. Make it deep. And just for a minute, focus on your breath and give thanks for the breath of God that keeps you alive. Heavenly Father, Mother, God, I just ask that you would open our hearts to hear what we are ready to hear. I pray that I get out of the way so that what needs to be said and heard is said and heard. Open the eyes of our souls, God. Open our spiritual eyes so that we can see you. And see you in ourselves and see you in the world around us. In Jesus' name, amen. I'm going to bring the thing over to the center. Do you know who you are? Do you know that you have the very spark of God living inside of you? Do you know that you are good? That at your very core, you are, in fact, divine? Turn to your neighbor. Take a look at them. Ooh, vulnerability. Just look at them for a second, if you can. Do you know who they are? Do you know that they have the very spark of God living inside of them? Do you know that they are good? That at the center of who they are divine truth? Now take a look up at this. Bob, if you could put that. One minute. If you look at nature around you, do you know what that is? Here we go. Do you know who they are? Do you know that they, every single one of them, have the very spark of the living God inside of them?
Do you know that they are good at their very core?
That at the very center of who
they are divine. That was a tough one. Genesis 1:28, and God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. Everything that he had made. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day and the darkness night. And there was evening and there was morning, the first day. And later, let us make man in our image after our likeness. God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. I'm not going to read the entirety of the beginning, but I want you to notice that in these passages and other parts of Genesis 1, before the forbidden fruit is eaten, what exists? Darkness. Not only darkness, but some need granted by God to subdue and have dominion over everything. And the question comes to mind for me, why does something need to be subjugated if there's no conflict, supposedly, before the fall? In addition to this, before there was anything at all, there was darkness. God moved in the darkness. There's also other evidences that there was natural pain before the fall. God says to Eve after the fall, I will increase your pain in childbirth, indicating that there may have been, the Hebrew word actually indicates that there already was some pain and that it would just multiply as a result of their decision. The snake existed before the fall. Adam's loneliness existed before the fall. The word for good in Genesis doesn't even mean perfect as we understand it. It's not the same word that is used for perfect in the Hebrew. It means it's good. I found that very interesting. Somehow, before the choice was made to eat the fruit, human beings were able to live connected to their source in God in this good, beautiful place that included darkness and the ravages of nature and even loneliness. And they were able to live there without seeing the world around them in polarities. They were able to hold it all in perfect tension, all in the same heart. All in the same space. They knew who they were. And knowing who they were gave them the strength and the wisdom to live their lives fully as they were meant to be lived, including walking through darkness and pain, including being utterly vulnerable before everyone around them, including God. No need to hide, no need to protect our hearts, because God needs no protection. They knew who they were, and they knew who the other was, and they treated each other as such. Life thrived because they saw it all, and it was good. And then a shift happened. We all know the story. The snake comes into the garden and tells the lovely people who reside there that they can know the difference between good and evil. That they could be like God if only they would eat the fruit of the tree. And so they do. And what happens? I think that's the point when the dualistic mind enters the world. And with it, the overdevelopment of the human ego, breeding insecurity that leads to envy, jealousy, hate, lust, all the sorts of things that run contrary to who we were made to be. Sin. Suddenly, what was good, what we were able to hold together in one heart, now has to be divided into camps of good and evil. One is now either a friend or an enemy. They now see the world through a different lens. And the Bible says that in this act, they surely die. I believe that they now begin to operate out of a sense of ego instead of spirit, making decisions and judgments for themselves about what is bad and what is good, and they forget that they can operate from a divine place within them that was planted there by God. The roles inside of them get reversed, where once the spirit ruled over the ego, now the ego rules over the spirit. As a result, they forgot that they were already like God, and that God, that good, was in everything around them. And then they are made separate. Separate from the world of unity, separate from God, and placed into a world where God now becomes something out there, rather than ever present and residing within. In essence, they fall asleep. And they begin to live in this illusion of the natural world, what they can see, what they can feel, what they can touch. They judge everything out of this knowledge. And they operate out of this knowledge. And as time goes by, they operate more and more out of ego instead of out of their true selves. And when the ego is in control, our divine core gets shoved to the side more and more until sometimes we don't even know it's there anymore. Which naturally leads us to begin our stories in Genesis 2. Rather than remember all the way back to the beginning that we are all good. I think that the reason we sin, the reason we hurt ourselves and one another, isn't because we're all born inherently evil, as many of us were taught, with no good in us whatsoever. I actually believe that the reason we sin is because we forget who we are, who we were made to be. We forget the spark of God within us that began before we were even born. We forget that we are, in fact, made of light, and then we hide our light because we have forgotten that it's even there. Missing the mark isn't about measuring up as much as it is about forgetting that we already do measure up. Forgetting how to live in life from our life source rather than from our egos. And I read the words of Jesus asking his Father to make his church one, telling his followers to remain in him and that he will remain in us, thanking God for revealing truth to little children rather than the wise, telling us that the kingdom of heaven is within us, and so many other words from the mouth of Jesus. And I cannot help but think that he came to teach us to remember who we are. In John 14, Jesus says, "On that day you will realize that I am in my Father, and you are in me, and I am in you." You will realize. Your eye will be opened. The eyes of your heart will be opened. I believe that Jesus meant to be our mirror. Whatever you believe about him, he lived a life that filled the world around him with incomprehensible love and compassion. And looking at him helps us to remember who we are. Looking at him helps us to know how to keep remembering who we are. And as we remember, we find ourselves operating more and more from the Spirit in us and less from our self-defensive, protective, often destructive egos. We become more vulnerable and less afraid. If Jesus' life was an example to us of what it looks like to live a life that remembers who we are, to live awake, we have to come to the conclusion that we cannot remember without going through pain. In fact, without dying to the small self of our ego. Believe me, it's a painful death. We connect with God by moving through our ego and then behind the ego through our pain. I think it's a key concept that is exemplified in the crucifixion. What greater sacrifice of ego could there possibly be? What greater example of moving through the pain and the agony of waking up to our true self, being resurrected, than the Christ becoming obedient to a humiliating death? See, resurrection cannot happen unless death happens first. But we spend so much of our lives avoiding the death of our ego, posing ourselves against the other. It's incredibly painful to face our own dark side, to welcome that dark side to the table, give it a voice, and exercise the Spirit of God within us to love those parts of ourselves that are full of pain and wounds so that they heal and become whole again and stop hurting others. Our egos would much rather splinter our souls like Horcruxes. And we walk around like zombies in this world. There's so much more. You are so much more than just trying to survive. We must exercise, like we work out our muscles, that part of us that has always been and always is connected to our source, the part of us that is the divine spark. But it has to begin with waking up deep inside to that truth. Jesus said, the eye is the lamp of the body. I believe he's talking about not our physical eyes, so he makes that comparison. He's talking about our spiritual eye. I wonder if when Jesus speaks of the virgins preparing to meet their bridegroom, he isn't talking about living our lives in such a way that prepares us for spiritual, that prepares us to recognize the truth of our full unity with God when we see it. Story about a Zen master speaking with his student. The student says, is there anything that I can do to make myself enlightened? As little as you can do to make the sun rise in the morning. Well, then what use are these spiritual exercises that you describe to make sure that you are not asleep when the sun begins to rise? I spent a lot of my life believing that I was depraved at the core of who I was. Some of that belief came from the theological tradition that I spent a lot of my life in. Some of it came from the things that happened to me. And some of it just came because we live in a world full of people who are asleep. Through all that time, the idea that I, my kids, my friends, even my oppressors, were at their core evil from birth, it never sat well with me. And for all that time, I thought that the reason why it bothered me so much was because of my ego, because I didn't want to bend God's authority and truth about the topic, that I just wanted to scratch my itching ears and believing that people who said that we are, in fact, basically good. But in the past couple of years, I'm believing instead that it hasn't been my ego at all that wanted to believe we are truth and good at our core. that we are the spark of life of God at the center of our being, that that is our true self. It was my ego that wanted to believe the opposite of that. I've been spending the past year and a half to 2 years remembering. It's not an easy thing to do. There's so many aspects of myself that scream, no, that's not true. This part of you is depraved. This part of you is unworthy. This part of you does deserve to go to hell. Don't integrate it. Don't forgive it. Don't tell it that it is loved by you and by God. My ego has had to die innumerable deaths on this journey toward remembering who I am. Do you know what the word repent comes from? It comes from the Hebrew word teshuva, which literally means to return. In order to return, we remember from where we came. The Bible is incredible. It begins with us forgetting, and it ends with God imploring us to remember. Remember our first love. Remember the heights from which we have fallen. Everything in between, I believe, is the story in metaphor, in prose, in historical accounts, in poetry, in utter humanity of how that happens, how we remember. It begins in the heart. We were always meant to live life with the understanding that we are one with God. There's no separation. When the snake said, "You will be like God," I think it represents the belief that God is something to attain, that it's something outside of us. We can't strive to be like something if it is something that's already in us. It's already the truth. We are already it. And this is the core lie that we all believe, that we have to strive to be like God, when the truth is that what we really need to be doing is remembering that we are already like God. We are one with God. God is in us. We are in God. We are one. The kingdom of heaven is not something to be attained out there. It's right here. It's our true identity. And the more that we awaken to this truth, the more our egos will take a back seat, and we will be able to embrace life, the light and the dark of it, the pain and the pleasure of it, and be able to see God everywhere, all around us. We will naturally more and more fall into a rhythm of living a life so beautiful that the eyes of those around us awake from their sleep to see how good they are too. And so on. On that day, Jesus says, "You will realize that I am in my Father, and you are in me, and I am in you." This is remembering, which enables us to have my commands and obey them, enables us to love God and to love others. That's all I've got. So, actually, one more thing. I think my gut kind of tells me that we are a church full of some wounds. And we all have some spiritual trauma, significant spiritual trauma. And that's a real thing here. And I think our temptation can be to still operate out of our egos and just try to figure it out. What do I believe now that's in opposition to what hurt me? And that's, you know, that's legitimate. It's how we're trying to heal and protect ourselves. We have an instinct to protect ourselves, but I think I just want to say it's really important to let yourself bleed. because we need each other to bind up our wounds. And we can, in the process, think theologically, what is it that we believe? What is it that we really think? You know, we're never going to figure that out completely. We're never going to figure that out. We can have systematic theology. We can have, what is it called? No, I'm thinking doctrine, you know. But I'm just, you know, God is vast. God within us, God within others. It's a vast thing. So I think part of how we get there, we have to let ourselves bleed. We have to admit our pain. We have to share it and talk about it. So I just encourage you to move through it. I don't know, I just felt like I should say that. And I'm sorry for the spiritual trauma that many of us have experienced. It sucks. So we open up at this time to some discussion. If you have questions or something's rubbing you the wrong way or you're like, yes, I want to talk more about that, this is where we do it. I've got a mic. So is there anybody that has anything to say or wants to share anything? Oh, thanks, babe. No? Okay. Oh, sorry, is it not on?
That's better. So we've known each other, so this is, I love Gail and everything you're doing, and so one of the things, I hear all of our sermons through like the ears of not just me, but people I know who are still more fundamental, because yeah. I can't help but hear it through. And the bridge between what we grew up, the trauma, you know, the grew up with yeah. our faith and the language we used to use. And then it seems like, especially at our church, we use a new kind of language. Mm-hmm. And at times it smacks of the other. Mm-hmm. That it's that hippy dippy. It's this other. You don't really believe. It's too, like, what about Jesus himself? What about God? And I wonder... you know, I could just hear the voice of some of my family members going, you go to like some new age church and you yeah. do yoga in the sanctuary? Yeah. Like, what do you actually believe? And I'm okay with it because I've gone through it so much and I know that I've had to change my language. But what would you say to people who are still carrying that burden of that kind of faith
yeah.
and language with them? To understanding God in this new light that you speak of this morning and yeah. reading Genesis in that way, too. I don't know. I'm curious to know your thoughts.
Personally, I'm still working that out. But I think part of it is recognizing that everyone has a path. I actually am facing that kind of confrontation right now with family members that are concerned for my soul. But I think that I would say, all I know, and I think this is how people answer the questions, you know, have a reason for the hope that lies within you, right? All I know is that since I have been looking at things this way, the fruits of the Spirit have been exponentially more manifested in my life. I love my kids better. I have more joy. I am able to see God in people before that I wasn't able to see God in. I mean, now that I wasn't able to see God in before. And at the same time, I realize even more how small I am at the same time. I'm understanding the difficulty of paradox, but also the importance of embracing it. Which some of that, I guess, is a little bit too hippy-dippy to get into. But the first part about seeing the evidence in my life of being more like Christ, I guess. It doesn't always sit, you know, it doesn't matter. sometimes, you know, but...
I think it's great, though, because it's hard to argue with that. When, you know, it's like Paul says, the fruit of the Spirit, when you know God's presence is in you, you will see this fruit, and I am have more love, more patience, more goodness, more gentleness, more self-control.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I think that's hard to, like, well...
yeah.
What you've done, that can't be true.
Yeah, like, that's the road to hell.
That's not right. You're getting it the wrong way. And we're like, but no, that's the what Paul said. That's the manifestation of God's Spirit inside of you.
Yeah.
And if you have less of it, then maybe there's something wrong. You know,
yeah.
The way you believe the fruit is shriveling and dying.
Yeah.
Then maybe there's something different needs to happen.
I would also say, like, it's not, I mean, there's a lot of value from what I grew up in and what I spent time in. I also think it's important to recognize the value of it and the value of the pain and the value of the, like, of all of it, really. But I also feel like to be able to, like, say, like, it seems far more effective to me to speak to someone from a place of awaken to your true self, God within you. Jesus did this to point out how God is within you and in everything. Then, like, you're awful and evil, and, you know, the only way God can see good in you is if Jesus is in front of you. Like, you know, I mean, like, it just feels... seems like it makes more sense to me and has been for me more growth inducing to see my inherent value of good through the eyes of God than that I'm not. Anybody else have questions or thoughts?
I never get to be that guy who raises his hand. I have a question for the speaker. What led you into this place where you have crossed over from this, you know, rigid view of Christianity as being about right belief, right doctrine, right theology, and understanding that it's about this human experience of discovering depth and life and love and God in the midst of ourselves? What led you into this new way of looking at faith and Christianity, I guess?
I feel like there's been... sort of a thread, even before the past couple of years. The churches that we have been a part of, there's just been things that I have always pushed the envelope on that didn't sit well with me. I always pushed the envelope with people on gay marriage and, you know, the holiness of same-sex relationships and all kinds of things that I would push, I didn't feel sat well, I didn't agree with, you know. So I feel like there was sort of a process of me going, like, this doesn't sit for me. Then we moved, and I felt like I was really able to, we moved from Chicago to California, and I feel like it just afforded me the ability to really, like, start to explore what I thought about things more without feeling like at the next corner somebody was going to be like, well, yeah, but make sure that you're, like, doing this and lining it up with what the Bible says about this and this and this. And it is clear in the Bible that it, you know, I just didn't have that anymore. And so it allowed me to explore it more. And I think that was, the liturgists was a big, big thing, listening to Mike McCarg talk about his, journey from fundamental Christianity through atheism and then back to spirituality again and belief in God. It was pivotal for me. But that's kind of like, you know, let's have coffee and talk for free 9 hours. That's like the basics. Anyone else?
Thank you. One thing I was just thinking of, when you're kind of like getting rid of all your old fundamental things, to me, it just hit me here. It's like when you kind of go on a diet or a fast and then you eat something salty or you have Coca-Cola again and it's just not the same. Like, I grew up on Shirley Caesar, so I love that music, but every once in a while I hear a song like, oh, that's really problematic. But I still love it in a sense. Yeah. But I was going to ask, when you're dealing with those relationships with people, you were saying, like, things have to, like, die for them to be resurrected. Mm-hmm. Is it still beneficial to kind of keep up not necessarily a facade, but just like a polite relationship, you know, with a parent or a relative, where you're just like not really debating those things. And if it comes up, it's just established again that we disagree. And then we'll go on to talk about our cousin or whatever, and yeah, just live a normal life.
Personally, I think so, because I think what happens is that our ego wants to convince them of where we're at. Let me tell you, preparing this message, I had gotten a letter from a family member, like in the midst of preparing for this, and it was right before I had decided on what I was going to speak about. And my decision to speak on what I was going to speak about, not this, this is totally different than what I was originally going to do, mostly, was a reaction to defend myself to that family member. And so I was operating out of my ego. And then I had to step back, let God's spirit, let my true self come forward and speak. So I think that arguing, I don't know. I mean, people are not open to hearing. It only polarizes you more, in my opinion. And so I feel like if people want to talk, I have said to family members, I hear what you're saying and I thank you for your love and concern. Try to see the intention behind it, because it's not bad. The intentions are for you to be saved and to be, you know, like, it's a good intention. So see the intention instead of getting defensive, in my opinion, because the intention there is good. And you say, I see your intention and I hear where you're coming from. If I put myself in your shoes, I can totally see that perspective. However, and I'm happy to share with you mine if you feel that you're really open and willing to hear where I'm coming from. And if you can't, I totally get it. It's fine. But let's just kind of talk about some other things. Does that help? I think it's complicated.
I was just going to say in like a response to that, from my perspective, I think the key sort of in identifying if you hold differences with somebody, no matter who it is and no matter what the difference is, if you can't hold a posture of grace, it's not going to benefit anybody.
Yeah.
In the conversation, in the whatever it is. So like, I think that also is indicative of boundaries. Like if you have, whether it's friends or family members or whoever, that you can't talk about certain issues without them getting heated, even if those issues are important to you, if the person's important to you, it's healthy to create boundaries. And if those boundaries aren't respected, that's when you have to start creating distance. So I think that, like, we've all obviously been through certain forms of trauma, and especially a lot of spiritual trauma in some ways.
Yeah.
But we don't want to cause unnecessary trauma. And I think that that's sort of the point, is like, there's suffering and pain, all these things are going to happen, but we don't want to exacerbate what's already helping us grow to begin with. We don't want to wish that on other people either,
right,
if they're not ready to hear something or to be in the same posture. So that was just my opinion.
Hi, Catherine. Hello, Catherine.
Hi. I'm not sure if this is going to come out eloquently at all, but what does it look like for you to practice this on a regular basis? Like, how does it come up that you forget your strength or your grace and the goodness in you, and how do you remind yourself and get back to that place and operate from that place?
Well, for one, it happens all the time that I forget. But I feel like what has been a key thing for me is starting to, it's going to sound like I'm splintering myself, but it's more about unifying. I'm learning to strengthen, some traditions call it the inner witness. I'm learning to strengthen the part of me that is my true self to observe myself, if that makes sense. So when I'm behaving in a way, which happened with Jim, when I'm behaving in a way that I know runs contrary to who I really am, that part of me that is who I really am can observes it and just kind of talks to it that's not really who you are, like, you know, like, because I feel like what happens is the ego part of ourselves that wants to defend ourselves and claim our, stake our claim and put, you know, the walls up, gets overactive and doesn't remember, you know, and so I feel like I'm developing that part of myself that reminds, remember who you are, remember who he is, God within him, see God in him. And what helps me to do that are our spiritual practices. I mean, yoga is huge for me. Prayer, meditation, practices that help you to remember. You can't remember if you're not practicing remembering, you know. And we get so busy with life that it's very...
Yeah, I like that.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I know you were talking about that the life we live is about human experiences, and you talk about the spark of divinity in us. And I come from a very different background. I didn't identify as a Christian growing up, and I don't identify as anything in particular.
Yeah.
But I grew up with a very Hindu background.
Yeah.
And so now that you're incorporating these new ideologies of the yoga tradition into your life, do you find it a constant struggle every single day to accept and tolerate those kind of ideologies into your lifestyle? Or has it become easier in the way that because you're branching into like Eastern philosophy now and Western, are you finding that we all have that common, that oneness in us? Because, like, I grew up Hindu.
Yeah.
I went to a Catholic high school. I studied Buddhism in school. That was my degree. And so I'm used to finding that simple divinity within all the faiths. And now I'm at a point where, and many may disagree, but I personally, I do believe that we all have that one thing that we are leading towards, which is being good, doing better, being better, encouraging others to be better. And we all have a different path to get there. And I think that path is based upon our own pain in our life or mm-hmm. our upbringing. But that ultimate end goal is all about being better. So yeah, are you finding it easier to accept other faiths into your life? Or is it still a constant struggle every day to be tolerable, but you're trying to move forward?
I feel like it's not, I feel like it's a bit of both. I don't feel like I have a struggle to be tolerant of mm-hmm. other ideologies or faiths. Mm-hmm. What I do struggle with is, like, I'm reading the Bhagavad Gita. How do you say it?
Bhagavad Gita.
Bhagavad Gita, yes. I'm reading now, and I'm amazed how much in there runs parallel to Christ.
Yeah.
It's incredible to me, and it's so eye-opening, and yoga, you know, I mean, like, I'm studying to become a yoga practitioner, yoga teacher, and so because of that, I'm it's been really a fascinating journey for me, but I feel like the tension comes in with the old voices,
yeah.
Okay, and I don't know, you know, I'm not sure exactly where I land on everything, but what I do know in my gut is that God is within everyone.
Yeah.
And I just one thing that you said about like the ultimate thing of being good. I think that behaviors and doing good things, these are all devices. These are all tools that help us to awaken to what's there already. That's what I think. I think we already are of God. We already are. And I think all of those things aren't the end game. Mm-hmm. I think the end game is realizing and fully living in continuity with what we already are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes
sense. Because I think that if you think like, oh, I'm just going to be good, that becomes then more like I just have to do the good things
yeah.
rather than like living out of the core, you know, and like being awake to what you already are. And those things just then happen naturally.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyone else? Thank you. What's your name?
Misha.
Thank you. Anyone else? What time? How are we doing on time? Yeah. So we're going to, we'll wrap it up. If anybody wants to talk or whatever, hang out. But we're going to wrap it up. And thank you guys so much for the great conversation. That was like my favorite. God bless you all. Have a good day.